Yankee Yarn Time. Time to hear another story of New England, presented by Alden Hall Blackington and brought to you by the friendly First National Stores, New England's largest retailer of fine foods.
Good evening. One day when Mark Twain was riding through the South, he looked out the train window and saw a lanky colored yad chasing a turkey through the underbrush. Just as the darky was about to pounce on his Thanksgiving dinner, some trees and a board fence passed between the car window and the boy. And Mr. Clements, with a pained expression, turned to the man beside him and said, "Dear, dear, dear, now I've got to go through life without knowing whether or not that fellow caught the turkey. Someday I'm going back and find out." But like most people, he never did. How many men, especially at this time of year, when the old spring feeling gets them, will say, "You know what I'm going to do, Joe? I'm going up country and pick up an old house with a little piece of land, raise my own vegetables and have some fun, get a place with a fireplace and some woods back of it, not too far from the village. To heck with the city. I'm fed up." How many times has the dear lady in the back seat tapped you on the shoulder when you drove through some elm-shaded town and said, "Daddy, let's go over and call on those folks we met on the West Indies trip. We promised to 3 years ago." And you say, "Not today, Mama. We will some other time." I used to know an advertising man in Boston who said the same thing every spring. "Well, boys, in about a month, I'm taking the family for a little trip. Yep, we're going up to Penobscot. Boston to Bangor and back. I've been putting it off too long. I'm really going this year. I told the wife so yesterday." Then the first thing he knew, the years rolled by, and there wasn't any boat on the Penobscot. And that fellow died without ever seeing the sun go down behind the spruces on Owl's Head. It's funny how just a few words or a bar of music or the name of a person or place that you haven't thought of for a long time will bring back memories and visions of things that happened long, long ago. Last week, I received a letter from Mrs. George Gilchrist of Thomaston, Maine. She wrote to say that her family always listens to Yankee Yarns, and she enclosed a poem about the wreck of a Russian ship many years ago on the jagged ledges of Widow's Island, down near North Haven in Penobscot Bay. Widow's Island. Why, I hadn't thought of that place since the fall of 1916, when the late John Cogswell of the Boston Sunday Post came to Rockland, Maine, and hired me to go with him to Widow's Island to make pictures of a naval hospital that had been built there in 1883. We took a motorboat from Tilson's Wharf and crossed Penobscot Bay. I photographed the buildings, and then leaving the post reporter to wander through the empty corridors of the old hospital, I walked along the shore, looking for shells, arrowheads, pieces of eight, or pirate treasure. Islands have always held a fascination for me, and this was just the place where Captain Kidd or any pirate should have buried his treasure. It is, in fact, quite near that romantic island that Elizabeth Ogilvie has written about in her new book, High Tide at Noon, one of the best books about island people I have ever read. A few berries were turning from red to blue, and the bayberry was everywhere. On the scraggly pines above the overhanging ledge, long masses of silver-gray moss waved in the warm breeze. The sun was hot, and aside from the gulls, there wasn't a sound save the rippling of the waves as they rolled in on the beach. I followed a path along the edge of the rocks and looked down onto an old wreck. Nothing but the ribs of some long-forgotten ship that had piled up on the outer ledges in the winter storm. The heavy surf had swept the timbers up on the beach, and there, like the bones of some sea monster, they were bleaching in the summer sun. I thought to myself, if I could get down there at low tide and prowl around, I might find something in that old hulk. Maybe a coin or two. And it would be thrilling to learn what ship it was and when it was wrecked. But hearing a shout from Cogswell, I returned to the motorboat for the trip back to Rockland. The smell of the fish barrels and the motion of the boat banished for the time all thought of that wreck on Widow's Island. Someday soon, I vowed, I'd go back and examine those timbers. That was 1916. The next summer, the First World War was on. Then I enlisted in the Navy, and the old wreck was forgotten until just a few days ago when Mrs. Gilchrist's letter came with a poem about a shipwreck on Widow's Island early in the 19th century. The poem is called The Rescue, and it was published in a book of verses in 1882. The author's name is not given. The poem begins like this. "Nowhere fiercer strikes the tempest than upon the coast of Maine, when the bitter cold of winter turns to ice the falling rain. Heaven help the luckless vessel which the winds have blown this way, in among the rugged islands of our own Penobscot Bay. Then we learn from the yellow pages of that old book that on a wild wintry night, one Captain Salathiel Robinson, listening to the roar of the surf as it crashed and boomed against the rocky headlands behind his cozy cottage, heard another, more ominous sound above the howl of the gale and the pounding of the sea. A sound that old salt knew at once was a ship's strong timbers being smashed on the ledges of Fox Island Thoroughfare. Quickly, Captain Robinson got into his oilskins, and with lighted lantern and hip boots, he waded out into the shrieking gale, where the air was filled with salty spume and sand and the cries of men on the ship. He rounded up his crew of fishermen, young and old together, and they made their way to the wharf over which the gale-lashed tide was breaking. They could barely see the topmast of a big vessel, caught far and square in the jaws of the ledge, only a few yards offshore. There was no hope of immediate rescue in that wildly churning water, so the men went about getting ropes and lumber and blankets, and the women folks hurriedly dressed and fierced up their fires, broke out the brandy, and made pots of steaming tea, for daylight was near at hand. And when the first faint flush of pale gray light showed behind the tall black spruces on the island, that was a most unwelcome sight. For offshore a little distance, they discerned a helpless wreck at the mercy of the breakers that swept clean across her deck, with her crew up in the rigging in that driving wind so bleak, and a tattered Russian ensign flapping wildly from her peak. One of the old-timers says, "Huh, Russians, are we going to risk our lives for a lot of foreigners?" All eyes were on Salathiel Robinson, their captain and leader, who was waving his lantern to let the freezing men in the rigging know that help was coming. And with all the contempt that he could muster, he shouted above the roar of the breaking surf, "We'll forget that they are Russians, and remember they are men." But not a man moved. Robinson wiped the sleep from his face, and shaking with anger, he shouted, "If only Skipper Lewis were here, he and I would show you whether there's anything to fear. What we used to do together, we at least would do again, if it were but to shame you, you who should be stronger men." And turning from the silent fisherman, he stomped off, up the hill, in the faint, cold light of dawn, walking as fast as he could over the frozen, slippery ground in his heavy boots. It was full 2 miles to the house of Skipper Lewis. And when he got there, the door was open, and there stood the old man, like a warrior clad for the fray, needing not to ask what brought him at such an hour of such a day. And as they hurried back to the shore, Captain Robinson told the old skipper that his men were afraid to man the boats in such a sea. The old poem goes on. If you had seen the skipper of a Sunday in his pew, you'd have mocked him for his meekness. But all the island people knew there was force beneath his quiet. And though now long past his prime, there was no more daring boatman than he'd been in his time. At the beach, at length arriving, he suppressed his angry frown, saying, "Let's get the longboat ready. I think the wind is going down." The unsuspecting men brought the boat and shoved it into the water. Skipper Lewis raised his gold-headed cane and said, "All aboard. The man who flinches goes back home with a broken head." Not one of them, but would rather face the wrath of the sea and sky than the anger of Skipper Lewis. So grumbling under their frosty mustachios, they climbed in and grabbed the oars. The old man stood in the prow, and when the frail craft slid down the long green swells to crash head-on into a wall of water, he clung on like a demon and rose dripping and coughing to urge them on toward the sinking ship. It was his old wrinkled hand that first touched the rail of the Russian boat. The half-frozen survivors were lowered from the rigging one by one, and all were taken to shore in safety. Well, folks, that's the end of that poem. But what I want to know is, whatever became of those Russian sailors? Could that be the ship whose timbers I saw back in 1916 on the beach of Widow's Island? And what was the name of that vessel? I started out one rainy day last week to check up on that story. I went to the Boston Public Library and rummaged all through the early histories of Rockland, Vinyl Haven, North Haven, and the Fox Islands. No luck. I went down to William's bookstore and pored over stacks of dusty volumes on the Maine coast and shipwrecks. No luck. Even the Boston Herald Reference Library couldn't find anything. I telephoned Freddie Green of the Watertown Sun. He knows a lot about the Maine coast and such things, but he'd never heard about it. I wrote the select men of North Haven, but I haven't heard from them. Then I telephoned Governor Saltonstall's office. You know, he has a summer place on North Haven. And from him I learned that the old hospital buildings were torn down 15 years ago
and that Widow's Island is now a bird sanctuary. But not a word about the Russian ship or whatever became of her crew. Last Friday evening, after the broadcast about Donald Bain, I went down to Winthrop and consulted Edward Rowe Snow, the well-known authority on New England storms and shipwrecks. But even he hadn't heard of it. We burned the midnight oil, going through old books and records, but this saga of the sea was not to be found. So you see, if I had returned to Widow's Island, when there was plenty of time, I might have learned the truth about that Russian ship. But now, like Mark Twain, I'll have to go through life always wondering what happened. And now, here's Steve Burke with a message from my sponsor.
This is Westinghouse.